Harris and Scott Hamilton teaming up with Blues for Gene. The Gene Harris Scott Hamilton Quintet also chiming in the background. This is from their 1990 album, At Last. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and it's Free Your Mind Friday. What is clogging up your mind? What is making you not think about anything else? I think I know what it is, but really, we are all placed in the same situation. We are witnessing a nation in a state of flux. Not that it's surprising, from day one, and even before day one with Donald Trump, we kind of knew that his was not going to be a normal presidency, and that is an understatement. But anyway, this is a program. Today we suspend the regular programming, and we do what we call Free Your Mind Friday. And that is a special time for listeners to express themselves about something that really needs, in their view, really needs some attention or has had an inordinate impact on them. So we loosen things up a bit so that you can get to the heart of the matter yourself and tell us what you think is happening. And we put it out in the ether and we see what people think about what you're thinking. How about that? But it does help to have a very distinct opinion. Don't call in and then be wishy-washy and you're not sure what you're thinking. No, this is for people who know what they're thinking and want to get it off their chest. All right. 888-874-4888 is the number to call. 888-874-4888. We start with Henry from Chicago.
Hey, Eutrice, how's it going?
All right. How's by you?
All right. It's fall. Fall has finally arrived over here, so I'm surprised we have a fall because typically it's just either summer or winter over here.
You're being given the gift of a transition period.
Exactly. Listen, there's two things I want to free my mind on. One local and one kind of national. So starting with the local, as you probably already know, maybe the rest of the nation or Lead Story listener doesn't know, there is a looming teacher strike here in Chicago. The second one, I think the last one was in 2012. So there's another looming strike. The Chicago Teachers Union has already set a date for October 17th as the kind of like drop-dead date. There's no contract. So, you know, the thing, too, is that, you know, I'm not sure. Chicago being one of the biggest educational systems in the country, I don't remember, well, maybe I might be wrong, but I don't remember, like, New York and L.A. having these many teacher strikes in their education system. It seems like Chicago, they love to go on strike a lot. But, you know, a lot of it is outlined in the political mess that's going on over here, as you know. And you probably had I know you had Karen Lewis, the former CTU president,
yes,
on your show. And so, well, you know, she stepped down because of health reasons, and now they have new leadership in there. But then there's new leadership in, you know, at CPS, Chicago Public Schools as well. So they can't come to an impasse. So once again, the students are out in the cold for an education system that's really not that great either. But, you know, I do see the point of what the teachers are fighting for, because a lot of people may think that, you know, they're fighting for higher salaries, and that's not the case. The teachers union actually is fighting for better, you know, the better schools that they should have been actually fighting for a long time ago, as far as, you know, getting more support staff, trying to get, you know, smaller class sizes, hiring more qualified professionals in the schools, and as well as, you know, certain janitorial services and CPS that's really not doing their job. And because, you know, a lot of money gets filtered into the school system, but a lot of that money is not being used for the schools. So lots of, you know, corruption going on, you know, with the schools. And I think I'm looking at the side of the teachers union, and they're looking at that. But CPS continues to be, you know, put out this media blast here locally in Chicago about, you know, well, we're giving the teachers, you know, a 30% increase or whatever, but they're saying that that's not the fight that they're having. So once again, it's a, you know, once again, it's a political tug of war where, like I said, the children are out in the cold again. And you, I know you haven't mentioned this. It's probably on your mind. The Botham John, Amber Geiger, mm-hmm, trial, and this recent verdict, and also aftermath of what has gone on.
Put one sentence in there that tells us what the story is, the big picture of your story.
Okay. All right. So last year, Amber Geiger, who is a police officer in Dallas, she claimed she accidentally was in the apartment of Botham John. And when Botham John came into his apartment, Amber Geiger, who was a police officer and who was armed at the time, shot Botham John because she thought he was an intruder. So it went to a trial.
But in fact, he was in his apartment.
Yes, he was.
And she was mistaken about the fact that this was his apartment, not her apartment. And
exactly,
she regarded him as the intruder and shot, mm-hmm, him and killed him.
Yes, exactly. So a trial came, and she was charged for murder. And then she was convicted of murder a couple of days ago by a jury. And then after during the sentencing, she got 10 years where she can be paroled in 5. So probably from my estimation, outside of Jason Van Dyke, somebody who was convicted of murder who had the shortest sentencing that I know of, because typically murderers get 20 years minimum. So, but that's my kind of like outline of the case. But what I wanted to discuss is the aftermath of the case and this issue of I wouldn't even call forgiveness. I would call forgiveness showcasing, or showcasing forgiveness, because we've seen this happen before with the Charleston shooting, the Charleston massacre, where a young white man, went into an AME church in Charleston and shot up 9 people, including the Reverend, who is actually a state senator. So we've seen this before, and it's disturbing to me, not the fact of forgiveness, but like I said, the showcasing of forgiveness. And this mystheology of, you know, of forgiveness in Judeo-Christian terms, of how this can be healing. And I would say this, and I believe Adam Clayton Powell said this, who was a pastor and a theologian. He said, forgiveness without repentance is false grace. So it's disturbing. And it's like when the victims are black, that seems to be the running theme after about forgiving, you know, these people who have wronged us and who have terrorized us. So that is that's my free my mind on that subject as well.
Okay. Well, you're correct. I hadn't said anything. To be very honest, I was too angry.
Mm-hmm.
And to myself, I risked the anger over it clouding the issue. And I don't like to be in a situation where I am so invested in it that I can't, you know, create enough distance to objectively look at it. And then comes a question. Do you want to be objective? Why should we always be the ones being objective? No.
Mm-hmm.
This is a situation, and there are many different roles to play here. The family has indicated, because his brother, Botham John's brother, went up after the sentencing, went up to the murdering cop and embraced her. And he said, I love you like any other person. And it was a poignant moment, according to media, because they covered it. And it was a sign, you know, a typical sign. We see this happening all the time when people, black people, are done grievous harm. And basically it was a sign of, there they are again. Black people are just the most spiritual, the most forgiving people. Here is a man wrongly killed in his own house.
Mm-hmm.
In every case, the police officer was wrong. Nobody has raised a question. Well, were you drunk? Were you high?
Mm-hmm.
What caused you to lose your judgment? You come home late after a 13-hour shift, and you drive up to the corresponding level in the garage for the fourth floor. But in fact, you drove up to the third floor. And this is where Botham John, who was a young man whose family is from St. Lucia, and he is there in his own apartment.
Mm-hmm.
Enjoying
and mind you, he has no criminal record neither. He has no criminal record neither.
He was, by all descriptions, just the kind of man you want every young man to be.
Exactly. So that was no excuse.
Very well educated, had a good job, was single, and basically at the end of the day was having some ice cream. She comes in because she drove up to the wrong garage entrance for that bank of apartments, And she comes to what she thinks is her door, and she finds that the door is open, and there's somebody in there.
Uh-huh.
And she encounters Botham Jean, and immediately assumes that he's a burglar, or he's somebody there to do harm to her, and she shoots and kills him. Only after she kills him does she realize that this is the wrong apartment.
Mm-hmm.
Wrong apartment, you know, the investigation begins. But they were treating this case as, well, it was a grievous mistake. That's all. It was a mistake. People, you know, can do these things from time to time, not with the intention of killing anybody. So while it is murder, it is not murder the way we normally understand it.
Uh-huh.
You understand that she was, this is murder that occurred in the context of a person making an honest mistake. And that basically colored the whole tone of the trial, and therefore the conviction and the sentencing. We don't get that kind of luck in the African American community.
I like how you called it luck.
Yeah, we don't get that kind of luck. Well, you can make a grievous error. And within the grievous error, and not even the murderer is denying that she killed a man. We don't get the compassion and the what is extended to us as I could understand how it happened. And I know for sure you did not intend to kill him, and this is just a grievous, grievous error. So it's more accidental murder than deliberate murder. So now they're arguing about the degree of murder. But it does not move beyond the fact that the man is dead in his own house, doing nothing to you or anybody else, minding his business, having some ice cream.
Not committing a crime, neither.
Well, this is the thing. So now that she has been found guilty, unquote, and sentenced to 10 years. I don't know any place in the United States where you get 10 years, no matter what the circumstances are, for murder.
Well, like I said, Jason Van Dyke got 16 shots in the guy.
You know it's going to go through some further amendments because there will be discussion about whether this was really a murder. Was this really a murder, or was this an accident? And many years would be shaved off of her sentence, and essentially she'll end up doing community service.
Yep.
So, yes, I was very angry. I have to admit that. And I would have been sounding like a screaming, raging person if I had talked about it when it happened. But I decided to take some time. He's already been killed, but now we can take some time and really analyze what happened here, because there's so many things that come into play.
And Patrice, the forgiveness part to me was even more, you know, it was even more troubling. Because I know you talked about it with the Charleston, the victims of the Charleston shooting as well. And don't get me wrong, I don't judge, Botham's brother nor his family, because they've been traumatized right now. And in a case like that, you can't really judge what they're doing because they're still grieving. But I just don't like the fact that the media has made this into some sort of healing process for anybody. There's no healing going on right now with this case.
I know. And it's saying, here is a prototype for how we expect future victims and the families of future victims to act, especially when they're black.
Yes.
We expect you to maintain dignity and decorum. We don't expect you to have a bad word to say about the errant cop. All these cases in which police officers have dispatched black people, Latinos, people of color across the board, and there has been no real substantive response. And just like in the South Carolina situation, some piddly kid walks in with a gun, blows 9 people away, including the pastor of the church, who is an elected official.
Which means it's an assassination.
It is an assassination. That was my position. This is not a killing. It's an assassination.
Uh-huh.
And it didn't go that way. Instead, the coverage centered on how heartful the community was in comforting each other and even extending considerations to a young man who didn't deserve it.
And I don't even think it was labeled a terrorist act. Was it?
No, it was not considered an act of terrorism.
That's crazy.
Well, we had a good chat today, but I just want you to know I'm very much aware of the case, and I really have to put my brain together again so that I could logically discuss it. I was so mad. I wasn't even myself for the rest of the day. I said,
That's understandable. Yes. I know. And I feel like I can't talk about it myself without getting emotional about it. Because the problem is that sometimes your emotion takes over and, you know, we're not thinking logically. But yeah, I agree with you. I think I have to process this more in order for me to really, really examine this case closely.
Absolutely. And I think this has to go through several other paces. The case isn't done. They're trying to persuade people it's over. And look, it's just the most unusual ending to such a tragic case. And people are comforting each other, and they're so loving. And that's not what it is to me. Is a guy was in his house eating ice cream, and next minute he's dead.
Mm-hmm.
And for no good reason. So that's where my head is still. I have to kind of calm down. But thanks for bringing it up. Thank you.
All right. Have a good weekend.
You too. Edna from Brooklyn.
Yes. Good afternoon, family. So that was a very good conversation, and I just want to piggyback on that because there was another victim in this whole Amber Geiger scenario. Her name was Bunny, and she filmed the aftermath that took place after Geiger shot this brother. Bunny was retaliated against for doing the right thing. A brother by the name of Philip Scott from Advise Media Network interviewed her for about 20 minutes. It's actually on YouTube, and it's titled Bunny Speaks on Filming Amber Geiger Video Police Intimidation and Not Being Safe in Dallas County. It was a very interesting piece. But with that said, me speaking my mind this afternoon, I just felt like as a black woman, she was treated horribly. She lost her job because the organization, who she didn't mention in the piece, did not want to be affiliated with a high-profile case. So they let her go at will, and I think it was some sort of pharmaceutical company because she also lost her license. Her social media accounts were tapped into. So she's been struggling since she went forward with this, and she also talks about the intimidation, these guys coming back to her apartment every day asking her the same rhetorical questions. So right now, there is a GoFundMe page set up for her, and it's about at $42,000, which I'm happy about because, you know, she certainly needs our help, and that's how I'm freeing my mind this afternoon.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for your contribution today.
No worries.
Jay from New York, you're on the air.
Trees, how are you doing today?
Okay, Jay, how are you doing?
I'm doing good, I'm doing good. Listen, we have to move this country forward in regards to this whole impeachment nonsense with 45. If it does happen, it's not going to change anything. We have to figure out a way, as the so-called opponent of this character, to be able to get rid of him. Because the way that it looks to me, we're not going to be able to get rid of this joker. It seems like after the impeachment, the Senate isn't going to do anything about it, and then it's going to go into the election. And with the cast of non-viable candidates that this so-called Democratic Party has, this nut job is going to be reelected. And God forbid the nation if this nut job is reelected. Because it just seems like he can do whatever he wants to do and say whatever he wishes to say in regards to whatever script it is put in front of him for egregious acts that he's perpetrating and his minions are assisted in it. It's just becoming more and more the theater of the absurd. And for some reason, I don't know why the media isn't able to really do anything about it, or better yet, why the people like you always talk about haven't gotten in the streets to start the uprising over this joker. Because it's just becoming, by the day, to me it seems more absurd and worse and worse and worse. You don't know what's going to happen next. It's like,
well, here's an interesting point. So it has been established. Do you agree? It has been established that the president is viewed now, finally, in a broader sense, to be mentally unstable. Do you believe that? That has been established?
Yeah, but who? By who, Dutrice? Stop right there and say
right,
by who.
No, but I'm saying we have members of Congress, we have mental health professionals, we have a substantial number of voters. We see that there's concern about the mental acuity of Donald Trump. And it's extreme and getting more and more so every day. Let's put it this way. Why in the meantime isn't there a dramatic effort for the sake of the country, for the sake even of the president, to remove him?
I don't know why.
I'm sorry?
I don't know why. That's what we haven't figured out.
There's nothing that can be done until you go through this long process. No, this is an emergency. This is a national emergency, but it doesn't seem as if anybody wants to treat it like that. They want to, you know, go through the paces, and it would coincide with election politics, and they will, you know, it would all be added into the soup. No. It seems to me that somebody by now should have advanced the idea that for the sake of this country, because the president's mental health is so grave that he be removed and put into treatment, and then I guess that would mean Pence or somebody else, anybody else put in place. That is a very important move, it seems to me, because it would indicate that any trick, all these tricks that you're doing and you're getting away with, but still have the clout of law. It still has the clout of the presidency, crazy as it is.
I'm sorry to say that's silly talk.
Huh?
That's silly talk, Utrice. I'm sorry to say the American people, number one, don't even have that type of clarity. Number two, the people within this country that run it don't have that type of clarity. That's something that ain't even on the scope of these individuals that run this country. They ain't even thinking like that.
This doesn't involve the people. I'm saying this is a matter that Congress can deal with now.
But Congress not thinking like that. That's what I'm trying to say. That's not, I mean, think about it. Congress is talking about impeachment. What you're talking about is something that ain't even in their mindset. They ain't even envisioning something like that. Nobody has really even articulated that to the members that think he's a mental case. That type of solution. It's like there's no type of guidance within the country on how to deal with this problem. That's what's so maddening about this. There's no organization, there's no individual, there's no mechanism in place to deal with an individual that is as insane as this president is. And that's why when you say these things, one would have to question it, and one would have to say, who is there and what institution is in place to implement something like this, which needs to be done? Me and you know it, and others know it, but where is the institution to move it forward so that it could be implemented to get this man some help?
Well, that's in fact, a very good question. Because we have a framework that could work. We have the National Association of Psychiatrists and Psychologists, and they are in agreement. The president is mentally ill.
But they're not.
And therefore, the argument
Congress
would be.
Congress doesn't recognize him. Congress and the Senate don't recognize him. You treat?
Yes, I'm listening.
Congress and the Senate does not recognize their great works of labeling this nut job as a nut job. I mean, Congress is not going to take into consideration the articulation of him being a not well man that needs to be under observation, or you could even say the 36-hour rule or the 40 or the 48-hour rule. I mean, this man is absolutely showing you in front of the public eye that something is fundamentally wrong with him, and it's like he's getting a total pass with this madness.
He's getting a total pass because it seems as if in any community, in any household, somebody is acting so erratically as to cause concern by the members of that household, including the members of the household who have some degree of responsibility for that person. In Florida, they call it the Baker Act. Without knowing anything else, once a report is made that somebody is acting so erratically that he has become a danger to himself and to others and must be removed from the household for observation, then the law kicks in. The law says, all right. And they dispatch police officers trained in handling people who are mentally ill, and they put you pretty much in an environment where you are under observation for at least 48 hours. You can't do anything until after 48 hours. And then a determination is made as to whether to classify this person as a person needing continuing care, or was the person, according to the experts, experiencing a temporary lapse, whatever it is. But there is a provision to remove the person from the household or from the environment in which he could harm people and himself. I don't know why a president can't be removed for temporary observation, because that would be a gateway to the larger question of, has he been this way all the time?
Yeah,
and
but
we now need to consider removing him from office for the sake of the country, because he cannot be trusted.
Yeah, but it wouldn't be a good look for the country. It would be a taint on the country, in all honesty, to remove 45 from office and placing him in a facility to see if he's a nut job or not. Now, come on, let's look at the optics of it. Imagine taking this guy.
Try not to say nut job, because we do have people.
Well, okay. So let's look at the optics of it. Let's really look at the optics. Removing the President of the United States from the White House and placing him into a mental institution or a hospital for 48 hours or shorter or longer, to observe him as being competent to continuously run the country. Let's be real. If something like that happened in this country, do you know what the ramifications would be around the world? Let's be honest.
That's why
it would not be a good look. You could no longer be the superpower of the world.
I care about achieving an objective. Nothing is working. Nothing has worked. I care about the objective of having Donald Trump continue to keep a grip on the office of the President of the United States. I don't care what gets him out at this moment. I don't care even if it is that we have to be prepared to accept Mr. Pence. The fact is, if I had to make a choice between living with Mr. Pence for 2 years or continuing the full term of Donald Trump, guess what I would choose. So whatever could achieve that goal, let's take a look at it. But you know, you're right in the sense that we can't expect this level of bravery from Congress. There would be smack dab on the question of, well, how would we look? How would it, you know, how would our authority across the globe be affected by putting our president someplace for psychiatric observation?
And that's all what it's about.
You have to decide which is the greater evil. Which is a great
It's all about the perception of the. It's all about the perception and the optics of this country. That's all what it's about. It's not about the good of the country. The best thing that I heard today was from a newscaster saying that we need to leave this whole situation alone in regards to the Ukraine and start to talk about. What's going on with the other aspects in this country, the economy, what has happened with the tariffs, what is happening to the farming,
things. I disagree strongly with that, because the Ukraine issue gets us into discussions of all these other issues at the same time. The president has abrogated his responsibility. He's broken the law. He just ran roughshod through the Constitution.
Yeah, but the Ukraine issue, the Ukraine issue is a cut and dry issue. I think the manipulation from what he's doing is causing more confusion in regards to what's happening with Ukraine than the absolute facts of the matter. And I think other aspects of what's going on in the country should be focused on instead of this whole Ukraine thing, because the Ukraine thing speaks for itself, Catrice. The fact of the matter is that we know what he did was wrong.
You have to appreciate the Ukraine issue covers a lot of acreage. It's not about the president behaving badly in Ukraine. It's not about it's not confined to Ukraine. It hits at a whole range of very important issues. Did the president commit crimes? If he is a criminal.
That's a fact. That's a fact that he created crimes, you treat.
But the point of the matter is what's happening with the economy. It has to be brought to trial.
Yeah, but you treat, what's happening with the economy? What's happening with all other aspects in the country?
What's happening with the economy? It's been happening before he even got into office. This is nothing new. The elite rule the country and the world. That's what's happening with the economy.
You are right in a sense that there has been no president that has blatantly done what he's done in regards to the Ukraine and then trying to get other countries into, you know, doing certain things in regards to Biden. That has never happened. You know, it seems like in a little bit, as the historians has says, a little bit of what Nixon did during Watergate and things of that nature.
You see, this is the success. He has set it up as a dual issue. You either are with Trump or you are with Biden. We should be with neither of them. Here is Biden walking around like, you know, the great saint and his son. But there are serious questions here. I raised them. I raised the questions. You can't persuade me, because this is what is going on, and it is a crime, what they're trying to do to our brains. We have to see Trump as the bad person, and Biden and his son are two little saints. No, they all have to account, because they're all involved in shady business.
Yeah, they are.
Right. Yeah, but let's get this straight. This is what the country needs to learn. We have been subjected to a system of governance that has nothing to do with the law that we are supposed to be following. And we see time and again all these examples of people in certain high places in the regular society who can do whatever they want. And in the end, it is you and me and other people, ordinary people, who are paying the price.
Well,
Donald Trump
all I can
start
say
this problem in Ukraine.
We got to keep fighting.
Yes, we do.
We gotta keep fighting.
But we have to fight, though, with clear brains and clear eyes. We cannot allow ourselves to be finagled this way. Some people tell you, if you're patriotic, you have to think this. If you're patriotic, you have to do that. No. The fact is, these people don't care about that. They only care that they have the power to do whatever the heck they want to do. And they do it. Republicans and Democrats. Well, we should want none of them.
Well, I hope that we figure it out before it's too late, Eutrice, and he doesn't get back into office. Enjoy your weekend.
I don't care whether they figure it out. I care that we have to figure this out. We have to figure this out. Because we are faced with a complex enemy, and one is not different from the other. They both are dedicated to squeezing us as hard as they can. Thanks, Jay, for calling in. We have time for James from Brooklyn. Hey, Brooklyn is doing all right today. Hello, James.
Hello, you're on the air. Nice speaking with you today. I hope you all are doing well. I'd like to go back to the fact that Trump had originally said that there was fake news, and it has come to be that we see that there's fake news. Under Alton H. Maddox Jr., was going to be in the emolument clause that he was trying to give Trump some guidance, but the new avail as it happened. I myself, being a former police officer in New York City, I was summarily dismissed by Patrick Murphy after 1973. And I had undergone Article 78, and Article 78 would have filed in the right jurisdiction. And this is the way that they play. They do things, it's just like you say, one bird with two wings. That's all that the present party is about. They forget the tail. The tail makes it go elevate or whatever. Now, Dick Gregory, in 1968, proposed to write him in. And
proposed to what? Write him in.
And Alton also proposed before sometime last year to write him in as governor. And that hasn't seen the light of day. And of all the work that Alton puts in regards to that and his health and stuff that he's taken care of, we formed a group called Tehuti Facilitators Incorporated due to the fact that every place that Alton was to try to hold meetings and things like that, S.L. Green and them would come after him. From 16th Court Street and all, it's just enormous of the work that he and Bill has done.
I wanted you to do this because you're presenting us a whole bunch of facts, but we're not getting the central point that you are making.
Oh, okay.
What is your central point?
Well, don't worry about Trump. Our ancestors have already spoken. It goes like this. Humpty Dumpty sat on the wall. Humpty Dumpty had a great fall. all the king's horses, all the king's men couldn't put Humpty Dumpty together again. And they have already spoken. I think everyone could raise them. All right.
Thanks so much for your contribution today. Let's go to Judy. Hey, from Brooklyn. What's going on here? Brooklyn is taking over. Hi, Judy. You're on the air.
Hi, good afternoon, Miss Beatrice. Good afternoon to your listeners as well. I just have something that for the last 2 years that has been tickling my brain, and I just can't make sense of it. So I said, you know, let me speak to you and see if maybe you can help me, you know, shed some light on it. You know, along the same veins as what you were speaking with, I think the caller was Jay, this whole thing of we are supposed to believe what they tell us to believe, and we're supposed to see it along how they present it to us, and we're not supposed to analyze it, we're not supposed to kind of reason it out on our own. When they have elections, there's this electoral college. So what I've learned in this last election, which I never knew, is that after they have the actual election, and correct me if I'm wrong, there is a meeting of the electoral college, and after that meeting takes place, then it is official that the person who's been elected is actually elected. Have you heard that?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So that said, and then it's amazing that we I guess, you know, I don't want to be presumptuous, but I would think the general population in the United States that goes to vote, I'm sure many people don't know that. The masses don't even know that. But here's my point. If, for example, the Electoral College, in spite of what the popular vote said the people want, they determined this is the candidate that we want to win. So when they come in the news and they start to say, oh, the elections have been tampered and something went wrong, the Russians tapped in via Facebook, via wherever else, and they tapped our elections and, you know, it's not legit. When the Electoral College convenes, didn't they sit down and say, but wait a minute, this is who we voted for, or this is not who we voted for? I just don't understand how the whole schematics of the Russians tampering the elections, you know, came to fruition if there is an electoral college that actually determined who's going to be president. Like, if it didn't match up with what they said and there was a tampering, wouldn't they have said, wait a minute, no, there was no tampering because that is, in fact, who we elected? I don't get it. Is it something I'm missing?
No. No and yes. The system is very complicated. What people understand democracy to be isn't, in fact, how the nation operates. You go in your head, you say, well, I'm being a good citizen, I'm exercising my right to vote, and so forth, and you go and you vote. You consider that you have done your part as a citizen. Now, they found out ways, supposedly these are powers outside of the United States, but it includes the United States as well, where electronically they can tamper with the vote. So what you think is the vote really isn't the vote. It's like playing bingo.
Mm-hmm.
And you, you know, you're smiling because your bingo card is all filled up. And you get up there and they prove to you before your very eyes that although you have a full card, you actually haven't won anything. Because their control system says something different. Their control system shows that you don't have all the numbers. Now, you yourself would probably agree, oh, I wonder what went wrong. You don't know. You know what you see on your card. But the people, the master controllers are showing you their card. So you would tend to think, well, maybe that's right. Something is wrong with my card. I don't know what it is, but we have two different totals here. Two different things are going on with our cards. And since the ultimate authority is the people who control the master card, well, you're going to have to yield to that. We've been controlled in all kinds of ways. People stealing ballots disappearing, ballots being falsified, in all kinds of ways. The process that you and I are regarding as a straightforward legal process where there is no funny stuff happening, funny stuff is happening. So I don't put the emphasis on them. They have a plan. We don't. I put the emphasis on us. I decided, for example, I wasn't voting until I feel convinced that my vote is a protected vote. I don't feel that way. So, in as much as I feel that way, I'm not voting. I'm not voting. Or I tell the story many times. I made the decision in the voting booth. I was the most dedicated voter you could find. And then you see funny things happening. What do you do? I can't change them. I could change me. And I did. We have to continue this conversation because it raises some very important points. I want to thank you all for your enthusiasm in participating, your effort to bring forth the best for our consideration, and it's getting better and better. And I am proud of that because it means that you're getting better and better at being an aware person, able to change things around you. Well, this is the weekend, which means you should relax a little bit, surround yourselves with people who bring positive dimension to your life, and try to make it into the next week without collapsing. All right? We'll see each other Monday. Bye-bye.